Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Jim Lunis. I'm the executive director of the American Security Project, and with word just received that the Senate has gaveled into session for the week, I think we'll get our call started as well. We're joined today by two members of the Consensus for American Security, Brigadier General John Adams, United States Army retired, and Ambassador Stephen Pfeiffer. The call today is to talk about a couple of things, but specifically the new START treaty, which is still pending before the Senate, and the treaty itself, the foreign policy and national security implications of it, and why it is needed to be ratified before the Senate closes up shop for the year. The full bios of both Ambassador Pfeiffer and General Adams are available at www.securityconsensus.org. That's the homepage for the Consensus for American Security. But just a quick word of introduction about both. General Adams retired from the United States Army just a couple of years ago. His final military assignment was as Deputy United States Military Representative to the North Atlantic Treaty Organization in Brussels. And Ambassador Pfeiffer had a more than 25-year career in the Foreign Service, where he focused on U.S. Relations with the former Soviet Union, Europe, as well as arms control and security issues. He's currently a senior fellow at the Brookings Center. Without further ado, let me turn it over to Ambassador Pfeiffer for a few words. We'll hear from General Adams, then we'll open up to Q&A. Ambassador.
Great. Thanks very much, Jim. What I thought I would do is just outline the main limits in the new START treaty, and then offer a couple comments on why I think its ratification is in the U.S. interest. I mean, first, just to review, the treaty limits the United States and Russia each to no more than 1,550 strategic warheads. And there's a second limit which allows each side to deploy no more than 700 intercontinental ballistic missiles, submarine-launched ballistic missiles, and heavy bombers. There's a third limit that covers launchers, which is a bit more generous, but really the two principal limits are 1,550 for strategic warheads and 700 deployed intercontinental ballistic missiles, submarine-launched ballistic missiles, and heavy bombers. For point of comparison, the two previous strategic arms agreements, and I have to caution that the counting rules are a little bit different, so it's not quite apples and oranges, but they're not exact. But the 1991 Strategic Arms Reduction Treaty Number 1, which New START replaces, allowed each side 6,000 warheads on 1,600 intercontinental ballistic missiles, submarine-launched ballistic missiles, and heavy bombers. And then the 2002 agreement signed by President Bush and then President Putin allowed each side 2,200 strategic warheads. It didn't have any limits on missiles and bombers, per se. Briefly, why I think ratification of the treaty is in our interest, I'll give you four reasons. The first is that it reduces and caps Russian strategic forces that can target the United States. I don't sit awake late at night worrying about a Russian nuclear attack, and I suspect there are not many in the Pentagon who do, but I would still argue that Americans are safer and more secure if we reduce and verifiably limit Russian strategic nuclear forces. The second reason is that the New START Treaty contains a broad range of verification and transparency measures. The sides have to exchange a lot of data. There's requirements for notifications. Each side can do up to 18 on-site inspections per year on the territory of the other side. And these inspection measures and data exchanges are going to give the United States a lot more information about Russian strategic forces than we would have otherwise. For example, when American inspectors conduct an on-site inspection at a Russian intercontinental ballistic missile base, when that team arrives, the first thing that the Russians have to provide is a list saying, these are all the ICBMs at the base, here's where they are located, which silos, and the number of warheads on each individual ICBM. And then the U.S. inspection team has the right to pick one of those at its choice and say, okay, we want to go there and open that missile up and show us that you say there's three warheads here, that in fact there are three warheads on that missile. And that's going to give us information that we just can't get otherwise, and that means that the U.S. military can be smarter in how it equips and operates U.S. strategic forces, and we can avoid worst-case assumptions. So that verification transparency aspect is a huge aspect. And we don't have any of those inspections or data exchanges now since the START I treaty expired just a little bit over a year ago. The third reason why I believe new START is in the U.S. interest is, although it will require some reductions on the U.S. side, in fact, the U.S. military has been very much involved in shaping this treaty, and the treaty will allow the United States to maintain a very survivable, agile, and robust strategic deterrent that can protect both the United States and American allies. So I think those arguments in arms control and national security terms are compelling. I'd add one additional sort of extra credit type reason, is that if you look at New START and its negotiation and conclusion over the last year and a half, it really has been a big factor in an improved U.S.-Russia relationship. And that relationship has yielded things that are very important to U.S. policy goals, specifically a lot of Russian help in terms of access to Afghanistan and being able to supply American and NATO forces there, and a much tougher Russian stance over the last year than we'd seen in the previous 7 years on the question of Iran and readiness by the Russians to impose sanctions on Iran. So again, that's not strictly arms control, but it's been a very important plus that the United States has gained as a result of the treaty. One last point I would make is that although there is some I think confusion about the treaty, the treaty does not limit missile defense. And I think there is a bit of confusion about it. The treaty mentions missile defense at two points. One, in the preamble of the treaty, it says that there is a relationship between offense and defense, and that's simply a fact. I mean, one side's defense can affect the other side's offense. But being in the preamble, it doesn't have any effect in terms of limiting missile defense. The one specific limit in the treaty on missile defense is in Article 5, Paragraph 3, and it basically says that the sides cannot put a missile defense interceptor into a converted intercontinental ballistic missile silo or into a converted launch tube on a ballistic missile submarine. And that actually prohibits the United States from doing something the United States would never under any circumstances do anyway. The head of the Missile Defense Agency about 4 months ago testified that the cost of converting an old ICBM silo to hold a missile defense interceptor is about $20 million more per silo than building a brand new silo. So limits that prohibit us from things that we wouldn't do otherwise shouldn't really be problematic. Otherwise, the treaty has no impact on missile defense. So my conclusion is that the Senate should ratify the treaty. They've had the treaty text now for 8 months. There were 21 hearings and briefings of the Senate, and the administration answered almost 1,000 questions for the record. So the senators now, they know they understand the treaty. And delay, I would say, has costs. I mean, the cost is if it falls over into the new year, under Senate rules, the treaty has to go back to the Senate Foreign Relations Committee for review with the new Senate. You'll have time requirements to bring new senators up to speed. And so you're talking about not having it fall over into January, but it's going to be a number of months before you can get back to it. And that's just going to lengthen this period where, like now, we don't have access to the treaty's verification and transparency measures, and we don't have as much information about Russian strategic forces as we could. So I've probably exceeded my 5 minutes, but let me stop there and turn it over to the general.
General Adams.
Thank you, Steve, and thank you, Jim. I'd like to, enlarge upon a couple of the points that the ambassadors made and then add a couple more that I think are also well in support of the treaty. First of all, this treaty does need to be ratified as soon as possible, and it needs to be ratified in this 111th Congress. As the ambassador said, starting over again in the 112th is really starting over in terms of putting it on the floor, all the hearings. It's a new landscape. I mean, you're really talking about months, if ever, that the treaty would be passed in the 112th. And so this is the time to do it. And I'll give you a couple of other reasons that really add to the sense of urgency. One, we need to get our inspectors back on the ground in Russia. And I think, as the ambassador suggested, this is not just a matter of verification inspections, which we haven't had for more than a year now since the expiration of the first START treaty, but it's also a matter of The verification inspections are part of a panoply of intelligence verification monitoring methods that we have. They're all linked. One cues up the other. So we have ground-based verification measures. We have air-based. We have space-based verification measures. We take one of them away, and it affects the entire system. And right now, one of the most important verification on the ground is not there. So it means not just that we miss the verification on the ground, but it weakens the entire ability that we have to monitor the Russian nuclear arsenal. Second, as the ambassador mentioned, this is about our strategic planning and making sure that our strategic planning can move forward in the way that it needs, not only for maintaining a survivable, robust deterrent, which we completely agree we must do, but it also means that the prompt global strike plans that we have will not be resourced as effectively if we have to spend money on maintaining basically a nuclear posture that addresses 20th century threats as opposed to 21st century threats. Our planners in the Pentagon need to be able to look forward as opposed to reaching back into the Cold War to maintain a deterrent system that doesn't address the sorts of threats that we have now. They've got good plans to develop prompt global strike. I think most of you are familiar with that. Prompt global strike is a conventional system. And it's something we need to properly plan for and resource. And again, if we have to spend money on this nuclear arsenal that's for the Cold War, we won't have that money. The third thing is I worked at NATO my last assignment and spent nearly 9 years in Brussels. So I'm familiar with the climate at NATO, and the U.S. Is viewed as one of the 28 allies, but certainly the first among equals. People look to the United States for not only conventional, but of course they look to the United States for leadership on nuclear issues. And as the alliance went to its Lisbon summit three weeks ago, one of the major items on the table was a missile defense system that covers the entire alliance. And the term was used indivisible security for the alliance. And all 28 members, of course, led by the United States, which has promised significant resources for this, all 28 members agreed to begin work on a missile defense system for the alliance. Interestingly enough, the Russians have agreed for the very first time to take a look at participation in NATO missile defense, NATO-Russian missile defense. And the term of art that was used at the Lisbon summit was missile defense and indivisible security from Vancouver to Vladivostok. That certainly is great rhetoric, but it also promises for the very first time that the missile defense plans for the United States, NATO, and Russia will be able to at least begin to move in a comprehensive direction. This is significant. It's not directly related to the treaty, but it is hard to imagine. It is absolutely difficult to see how we could cooperate effectively with Russia on missile defense or the other issues, tactical nuclear weapons, and proliferation issues at large, like North Korea and Iran, if we can't even bring the treaty into force that's in our clear national interest. So it is related to the need to get inspectors back on the ground. It's related to our own strategic arsenal, the deterrent, as well as our conventional prompt global strike capability. And it's related to our relationship with NATO and Russia. As the ambassador said, this is a treaty which has great importance for a number of issues. The Senate needs to do its job. And I would conclude by just highlighting we've got roughly 150,000 American troops in Iraq and Afghanistan that are putting their lives on the line, and they're going to work through Christmas and New Year's, I guarantee it. I'm not suggesting that the Senate needs to work through Christmas and New Year's, but an issue of national security, they need to do their duty and put this to a vote. And I believe if it comes to a vote, it's going to get ratified.
General, thank you. And just to reiterate, both General Adams and Ambassador Pfeiffer are part of this Consensus for American Security, which is a broad and growing group of retired general officers, national security experts nationwide who are organized and, around these issues. Ambassador Pfeiffer has joined us today from D.C. General Adams has joined us from Arizona, where he lives, and they are part of a broad movement. So with that, let's turn the floor open to questions. If individuals would just identify themselves, who you are and your organization, and we can do some Q&A.
Hi, this is Jen DiMasio from Politico. I had a question. General, you said, you know, that you left some doubt. If it doesn't pass in this Congress during this lame duck, it might not pass. Are you concerned at all that Republicans will raise new objections in the next term?
Well, I come at this issue from a nonpartisan, not a bipartisan, but a truly a nonpartisan perspective. So I don't want to get into the politics of it. But let's I focus on the processes. I'm concerned that if this treaty is not ratified in the 111th, yes, there will be a change in the landscape. And any change in the landscape means that, and in fact, Senate rules and procedures require that the treaty be reintroduced, that it have the necessary hearings for the new members of the Senate. That's to be expected and appropriate. So we're talking. I don't want to predict how long that would take, but I suspect that the 112th Congress is going to have at least as busy an agenda as the 111th has been. Where this would rank in relationship to the other pressing needs that the nation has and the Senate has to consider as they convene on January 4th, I hesitate to predict that, but I suspect that it will take months. It's just a matter of just being able to get the business done that any treaty requires when it's put on the floor of the Senate.
Well, do you expect concerns from lawmakers about funding for specific, Senator Kyle has raised objections about nuclear modernization funding, but more specific concerns about funding for nuclear bombers, ICBMs.
I think that the issue of funding for the modernization is certainly all of us, I'll speak for myself, and I believe that the consensus agrees with this, all of us are concerned about nuclear modernization. The modernization funds that the Obama administration has put on the table, the $84.1 billion now for the next 10 years, realizing that the 112th is only going to be able to bite off their portion of it, but all they can do is act in good faith and project this really what experts, active duty and civilian experts in the government say is really a more than adequate budget for nuclear modernization. I suspect that those funds may be at risk, and the Secretary of Defense has even said he's also concerned that the modernization funds may be at risk if we don't get ratification of the New START treaty. So. I think the answer to the question is I'm concerned about the modernization funds across the board, whether we're talking about modernization of our nuclear facilities and warheads or modification of our various launcher platforms. I think modernization is something that we should keep that in mind. This treaty is part of really a very interconnected negotiation between the administration and Congress. Modernization is on the table. I'd hate to see that come delinked.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Do we have another question?
Yeah, this is Dick Klass. There are indications that some senators might want to have some word changes in the resolution of ratification. But there are also some senators, including Jim DeMint of South Carolina, who say that they want to have actual changes in the treaty that would require renegotiation, and hence their wish to push it into the next session. What do you think the Russian reaction would be to reopening the details of the treaty in any significant aspect?
Ambassador Pfeiffer, do you want to take that one?
Sure. I mean, first, I think the administration, both when this when the resolution of ratification was discussed by the Senate Foreign Relations Committee back in September, and now is prepared to be as flexible as possible on working out the resolution, but that does not extend to a resolution that would require changes to the treaty. Because I think what we have to remember is, you know, if we go back and we want to change parts of the treaty, we're not going to be able to just have a discussion of those changes that we want. The Russians are going to come back with their own set of changes then, and you basically open up the entire treaty to renegotiation. So you're talking about a process which will not be simple, it will not be short, it's going to take months, and you get back into a whole new negotiation. And the cost here is that, again, while we're having that negotiation, we don't have, as the general said, there are no inspectors, there are no boots on the ground. We're losing the verification and transparency measures in the New START agreement that are very important to us. So I think the treaty as it is, I think, reflects a balance of interest between the United States and Russia. I think the arguments are overwhelmingly in its favor of its ratification. And while it may not be the perfect document, in arms control, you don't get to negotiate perfect documents. You've got to negotiate something that the other side will agree with. But this is a pretty good document. It protects American interests and advances its interests in very significant ways. To try to reopen it, though, would basically reopen up the entire thing, including to issues that the Russians would like to revisit.
Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have another question? Going once. Going twice. Well, thank you all very much for your participation today. General Adams, Ambassador Pfeiffer, thank you. And you can always learn more at securityconsensus.org. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you, Jim. Thanks, Steve.
Thank you.